Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Kevin, we just did Restaurant Wars.
Oh my God, woo!
That was really fun. Totally fun.
It was really fun. Grant, we waited a long time. We got behind the scenes.
Yeah.
It was super cool.
We did get to see behind the scenes. It was so cool.
My favorite behind the scenes was just watching the chefs work.
We shut off all social media because it's Game 7, LeBron. Celtics, and we did not look at the scores. We have no Twitter feeds open. We are just going to go cold. Like, this is 1993, and we have it on the VCR, and we need to go press play.
It's Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
I'm Tom Haverstroh.
We're also here with Hershey Ash, restaurant consultant, friend of the show. Hershey is all things Restaurant Wars. Guys, we have chaos in the kitchen, chaos on the floor. double elimination, crazy stuff going on at Last Chance Kitchen. This is absolute madness in Top Chef 16. Tom, where do we even want to start?
The secret is out, Kevin. We did it. We went through, how many episodes of this show this season with the secret buried, cross our heart. We zipped our mouths. We somehow survived without leaking that we were at Restaurant Wars at Northeast.
That was us in Northeast. Orange team serving us. Brian towering over the table. Are eating the forgotten crudo and the Ballantine and the delicious desserts provided by Adrian in the fine New York strip of Fast Eddie. It was an experience.
It was amazing. It was a lot of fun. This was taped back in May, and we got an email from the PR people being like, "We love the podcast. Do you guys have any interest in coming on the show?" Or maybe it was the other way around where we were talking to the PR people and we said, "Hey, is there any way?" I saw that this was taping in Kentucky where
Tom, don't to get yourself. We hinted, we nudged, we we did everything in our power to just basically weasel our way onto their air. The wonderful public relations folks at Bravo and Top Chef have been terrific, but let's make no mistake about it. We begged and pleaded.
Yes, we got on our knees and said, "Please, please, let's get on." And they were like, "Well, you want to come on the John Calipari episode where, we go to Rupp Arena?" Because we already know that. It's in the previews. I'm not revealing anything there. But we couldn't make that for our NBA schedule. It didn't work. But we ended up saying, "What about this date?" And they're like, "Oh, that's Restaurant Wars. You guys would be going to Restaurant Wars. Would you want to do that?" We're like, "There's a polar bear shit in the snow. Come on, let's go." So you guys flew in, you and Eric flew in. Allison and I, we made the trip. I think we drove into.
Oh, you drove like 11 hours through the Appalachians.
That's right. And we got to Allison's house in Kentucky, and you and Eric got a hotel. And who did you see in the hotel?
We saw Carrie Barrett. It was very cool. It was a nice celebrity sighting. You know what's very funny, Tom? Because, like, you and I travel, we cover the league, we often find ourselves in the hotels the NBA teams stay in just by sheer coincidence. We run into very famous, high-profile people all the time. But there is something completely unique. Like, and it's old hat, right? Like, hey, Draymond Green, there you are in the lobby. But all of a sudden, it's Carrie Barrett. You get very excited. There's something completely different about being a participant in Top Chef than even, being on air or hobnobbing with players or coaches or whatever.
Let me jump in and then ask about that because I'm curious. I mean, first of all, let me quickly just say I must be a terrible friend because all I noticed was someone that looked very much like Kevin's boyfriend, Eric, talking to the camera and thinking, "Wow, that looks a lot like Eric." But it was my wife had to say, "Wait, isn't that Kevin sitting next to the person talking?" It took me a second to work out it was you. So I'm a terrible friend. I apologize.
You're not a terrible friend. We signed away our lives. We couldn't tell anybody.
But I had to actually rewind and be like, "Wait, that is Kevin and that is Eric." Okay, so I have some questions. I have lots of questions so that the general public out there and myself, we can learn. So there are three restaurants next to each other. Did it feel like you were in a restaurant on your own? Or did it feel like you were kind of wedged in the middle of two other restaurants?
Okay, so when we got there, you get you're told to go to a parking lot. Like, there's very cryptic instructions.
Wow.
So you get an email that says, "Your Top Chef tomorrow will be in," and then like they originally said it was Louisville. So we got the babysitter and we scheduled the babysitter for like a normal, like 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock or whatever it was. And then we get the email that the event is an hour away in Lexington. So we go to this warehouse in the middle of Lexington, Kentucky, where we had to go to what was it, Sam's Club, Kevin?
Tom, a lot of bad stories start off with, "We go to this abandoned warehouse on the edge of Lexington." So it's very brave of you guys.
You will hear some audio from our trip back from Restaurant Wars. We recorded like some snippets, a post-game review live in the car, whatever rental car that Kevin drove. We go to a Sam's Club as per the instructions, and we had to wait. Kevin, remember waiting for like someone to flag us down, like some like secret.
It was Tom is too young to remember. Actually, Hershey, you're too young to remember. It was like going to a rave in 1995.
What are you talking about? Do you know how many raves I went to in 1995? That was my glory era. The
Docklands like in Melbourne. You were like 12.
I appreciate you, Kevin. Thank you. I wish that were true.
It was like that. Like you wait in your car in the rain in a big box parking lot, waiting for somebody to identify you and then get you on a shuttle bus.
And you get on the shuttle bus and then you're with a complete stranger. So it's almost like the sun comes up and then all the animals come out of their like burrowed underground layers. And like suddenly all these people, once they saw the shuttle come down the parking lot in Sam's Club, all these people very nicely dressed in a Sam's Club parking lot, dressed to the nines, go out of their cars and somehow flock awkwardly to the shuttle bus. And then you get on the shuttle bus and everyone's like, gossiping with each other, like, oh, how'd you get on the show? How did you get invited? And it was all locals. It was all like Louisville or Lexington or in the area. People knew people. And so everyone's just so excited. It's like going to an NBA game, but you don't know who's playing.
It's very, very – the sense of anticipation. It's clearly an event. I mean, it's very cool to go to Restaurant Wars. I mean, it's not just any – you're not just going to the little hey, we've set up food trucks for 200 people one. You're going to Restaurant Wars. I mean, this is the event. I mean, let's face it. I think Restaurant Wars could be a spinoff. It just great sense of anticipation. We're driven just a little ways, I think not much more than across the street, but into kind of a warehouse complex where one half – one side is essentially the holding tank for all of these people, plus the fascinating production operation.
Are you being served beverages at all while you're waiting?
Yes, while we're waiting, we are served random snacks that came from that Sam's Club, clearly.
And you're assigned a reservation time.
And there's a wrangler. It's all very, I mean, anybody, and again, so someone who's worked on a reality show, I mean, these are really complicated and intricate productions. I mean, there are just dozens and dozens, hundreds of people that make Top Chef happen. I mean, you see Padma, you see Tom and the guest judges, you see these 15 folks, but there are dozens and dozens of professionals doing everything, sitting in director's chairs. They've got, you know, we got to go to, you know, Tom, we got to go to the director's area where all the screens of the different cameras and camera one, camera two, and it's all just, it's really, really intricate. It's a traveling road show. They do a great job. But so far, let's go back to Tom, tell us about, I mean, the restaurants, essentially, it's a warehouse split into three different restaurants. It looked like kind of TV sets, but I don't know about you, Tom. I felt like once we sat down, it was a restaurant. Like it could have been a restaurant in one of these industrial kind of nouveau food halls kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. And I think the thing that people would not get from watching the episode and what it was so fascinating to see was we were because of our podcast, we kind of got this like behind the scenes. Like Kevin said, we got to go to the director's room. We got to go like, you know, check out the chefs before we went to the restaurant, just like seeing the kitchen. And we missed our reservation. Because we were doing this VIP like backstage tour with this lovely PR lady who just like brought out the red carpet for us, we missed our reservation. So we come back after doing this tour and we're like, hi, the table for four, Haberstroh and Arnovitz. And they're like, oh, we called you like a half hour ago. You missed your table. And we just panicked. We panicked. We're like, wait, does that mean we don't get to go to a restaurant? And so we go back and we're like, what happened? Well, we missed our table. And they said, oh, we'll get you in, but it's going to be at the very end of the night. So you're going to go to Team Orange and you're just going to have a later reservation. I swear, Hershey, we must have waited for 90 minutes in a hot, stuffy. It was May, end of May in Lexington, Kentucky. And if you could notice, like there were beads of sweat on Tom Colicchio's head and Padma was fanning herself on the show.
It was hot.
It was a steam room in there. And so we waited for maybe 90 minutes. And when we sat down in Northeast, we were greeted by Brian, who's very you never forget Brian because he looks like a tight end, right? A huge guy. And he sits us down.
Hipster tight end.
Yeah. Hipster Joe Flam tight end. So he sits us down and we're like ravenous. We're hangry. My wife is like, where's the food? Where's the food? Give it to me. And they're like, here's all the rosé you want because you're like the last table here and you've been waiting for 90 minutes past your reservation. We're so sorry. Here's the bottle of rosé. And Eric and my wife went to town on this bottle.
But so we are leaving a Taco Bell right now.
We are leaving a Sam's Club parking lot.
And then my mom goes, where are you going? I was like, we're going to the Sam's Club in Lexington. She's like, what?
We are now about to embark from Lexington, where we had Restaurant Wars, back to Louisville, home of Allison.
my beautiful wife, my lovely wife, who was cranking hangry out of her face before we sat down for that meal. And boy, did we enjoy some rosé.
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. The rosé was flowing freely.
They did keep it going.
So that's already a hospitality win, okay? So that's a good question. So then, was there any atmosphere in the room? Was everyone sort of finished up eating by then? What was there any semblance of an atmosphere?
I mean, I think it felt like, you know, most restaurants at the, you know, if you came in at a 9:30 or 10 o'clock reservations in a city other than New York. You know, I mean, I think definitely had the, we're toward the tail end of service. And but there were still diners. It still felt, I mean, look, people were happy to be there. And frankly, I mean, the food was delicious. Tom, I mean that we were absolutely blown away by the quality of the food. I mean, it was one reason I sort of was bullish on Orange Team last week, kind of tipped my hand a little bit, just because we didn't have, I mean, other than the even the forgotten crudo, Eddie's crudo, which was perfectly fine. I mean, you know what it needed? A little togarashi. That's what it needed. Like a little, just little sprinkle of some heat, and it would have been fine. But we were so impressed with food. I think other people seemed to be really impressed with the food. But it definitely had the kind of tail end of service.
But because you guys came late, you didn't really get to experience having to wait too long for your food. I guess you were the only table they were cooking, or?
No. There were other tables, and I think the wait at that point, I think it probably moderated. I mean, it didn't come quick, but it was. You know, it was not notable. Was it, Tom? Am I forgetting?
So there's one thing that happened that was really funny. So we get in, Brian like seats us, and we sit down and look at our table, and we notice that our tablecloth is filthy.
And I'm weird about stuff like that.
The tablecloth need to be replaced.
Yeah, that was a little grody at the beginning. That was a weird opening. Was where we arrived at our table, we were seated, and the table was, the cloth was just filthy. Mm. My fork was sitting in all kinds of unidentified goo. There was crumbs on the table, some unidentified crumbs.
But is that the fault of the chefs, or is that the fault of the serving staff?
Let's also remember we were eating in a warehouse.
We were eating in a warehouse that was 90 degrees.
We sat at the Orange Team restaurant, which
Northeast.
Eddie, it was called Northeast, it was Eddie,
Eric
was one of them. Ryan.
And there's a girl.
And Adrian.
Yeah. Adrian. The four of them did it.
They were all lovely.
They were great.
They came out to meet us, and they were shuffled away because they were not supposed to do that.
Yeah, the guy was like, I didn't know there were patrons still out here, and he like freaked out and like shuffled them all away.
I mean, let's remember that we arrived to dinner in a Sam's Club parking lot and then got on a shuttle to a warehouse.
It was in a very sketchy area of Lexington. It was not the finest part of Lexington.
So I think a dirty tablecloth is fine, if not to be expected.
Well,
I don't know. I don't think it's fine.
As Kevin remarked, my knife is just sitting in goo, unidentified goo.
So what happened was, Hershey, we decided, we were like, we should tell one of the servers that we need a new tablecloth or something to be reset, because there was like food everywhere on our table.
I'm really weird about stuff like that, too.
No, I don't think I think it's disgusting. Yeah, but carry on.
So then a lot of people on Twitter, after they saw us on the show, they asked us, hey, this must have tainted your draft, because you would have known that Brian at least makes it that far, and you must have drafted Brian because it would have tainted the objectivity of the draft, and we'd be biased. But I, just remembering how backed up Northeast was for us, B, how there was food all over our table, and C, this was the fun part, we actually picked up all of our utensils, the candles, the tableware, and held them as the customers held them as the servers put the tablecloth back down. It was just the scene. It was amazing. It was one of these like restaurant wars. You'll never forget it. How you're holding all these things as customers while the servers can reset the table, because it was restaurant wars. I mean, they didn't have enough bodies to handle it. So we were hoping the cameras were there to see it. And that is why when people say you must have been biased towards Brian, I don't think so, because we had up and down experiences. So it wasn't like they nailed it out of the park. The food was great, but because of the backup and the food on our table, the food on the tablecloth, we kind of felt like maybe this evened out, so there wasn't an advantage.
Well, and then there was the other issue, right? Which is we know the show only had – they were 12. We knew there were three restaurants. We knew there were 12 contestants. We knew there were only 15 to start. So, you know, okay, maybe you know a guy survives 3 weeks. That isn't – that doesn't warrant, oh, I'm gonna pick him first.
Of course.
Right?
But like, could you see who was out in the various kitchens, though?
No, not really. I mean, and also, I don't recognize – it was such a blur – like I just can't, it was a very just busy, blurry, chaotic scene. Not just Northeast. I mean, the whole complex, right? I mean, I think all productions are to some extent.
Yeah,
but it was just like I didn't honestly. It was funny because when Eric, when Tom and I kind of started talking about like, hey, how do we want to handle this? I was like, dude, I can't remember anything other than that guy with the funny glasses. Like, I can't. Like, I didn't remember Eric. Like, they all came out, I think, at one point and introduced themselves, right, Tom?
Yeah, and then they got shuttled away.
Because yeah, exactly.
So they came out and they're like, oh, nice to meet you. You guys are the podcasters. We're like, yeah. Pack your knives. They're like, oh, cool. And then suddenly a staffer, like a Bravo staffer, like grabbed them and put them in straitjackets and huddled them away. And they're like, you can't meet them.
They came out with a butterfly.
Not to go commissioner, but I think there's no advantage there. First of all, I think you guys both had the same advantage. The analog would be, Tom, that if everyone got to see Darko doing post-ups against more than a chair, if everyone got to see that, then that would be fair. That's not like Detroit would have been at a disadvantage. It's like you all got to see post-ups at more than a chair.
Yeah, we got equal viewing time. So I don't think either of us were and you'll see, I think in our draft, Brian didn't go all that high. I think he was like the fifth or sixth pick. And to me, like, here's the other thing.
And we also didn't know who made which dish either.
Didn't know Brian did the.
We didn't know that Brian did the Ballantines.
Yeah, because he was like, yeah, that's my dish. I don't know if he was supposed to reveal that, but he told us that it was his dish and it was fantastic. And we complimented him on it. But we didn't know, Kevin. We didn't know how the other restaurants were doing. We really didn't know.
We had no idea.
So that was my question about if you could get a feel for what was going on.
Yep. So we waited in line for what, like an hour?
Yeah, the backup at Team Orange was pretty severe.
And it was enough of a backup where I kind of felt like we were pawns in the whole game. Like, let's stick Kevin and Tom in the back, the last people on the Orange team. As people are walking out, they're saying it was bad, right, Allison?
Yeah, one girl was like, I feel sorry for you. It was bad.
But everyone was drunk.
Yes.
I mean, ladies were falling.
Oh, they had been drinking for a very long time inside that restaurant.
I think that's the biggest takeaway is if you go to restaurant, if you're fortunate enough ever to go to Restaurant Wars, you're going to see a lot of drunk people.
Yes.
And there's very little food to sop it up.
No, there's no food to sop it up. It is slim pickings.
Hey, you know what, though? They got limited budgets.
No, I get
They're
it.
Here
I get
to
it.
Show
hey.
Off their thing. We can stop for tamales.
Three glasses of rosé.
White Castle.
Three dishes. It's a one-to-one proportion.
I kind of thought I had a bottle of rosé. But,
which means if you thought it was one bottle, it was probably two. So I thought the food was really good.
Food was good. Small portions, but delicious.
Yes.
Hershey, I thought a lot watching this episode. We'll segue now into the episode. Probably listeners are like, ah, screw you guys. Let's talk about the episode. One, I kept thinking about your comment last week. It would be very interesting to see Restaurant Wars if each team was furnished with trained wait staff. And by the way, I want to say this about the wait staff. These are some of the kindest, nicest people we encountered in Kentucky. They get a bad rap. The truth is, they weren't all that trained. Many of them did not have sort of restaurant experience. They come...
Right, that's not their fault.
Right, exactly, and it's not their fault. These people were kind, they were patient.
They were so sweet.
Yeah, by the way, clearly not restaurant professionals, but I would be very curious in a future seasons to see if you furnished these chefs with real trained staff. You know, got a wait staff from existing restaurants in town, or if that might be a really fun gig, or, you know, person who waits in a... come out to wherever we're taping, and this would be cool. We get to be a waiter for a night on Restaurant Wars. You know, whatever. So the other question I had for you, Hershey, is it dawned on me watching the show and having been in the restaurant, there are really only three hands in the kitchen. On a busy night, on a Friday or Saturday night, at a restaurant with, let's say, an occupancy or with 40 seats, how many people would be on the line and in the kitchen like in a regular restaurant?
Okay, so you're opening a whole can of worms here because it's literally what I've been hired for over the past few years. I advocate for very, very small kitchen crews. So you're kind of hitting in a kind of a sweet spot for me. But I would say like this, for a 40-seater, that's an adequate amount. If I'm really going to be honest with
only
you.
Only three human beings cooking food?
Well, you have to keep in mind that there would have been maybe two or three human beings washing plates and dishes, which is half the kitchen roll as well. Yeah, I think that that's enough, considering that they're not you weren't ordering off a menu. They were just pre-making food and sending it out. So the way to think about it is not really like a restaurant, but more like a function room, to be honest. So okay. You know what I mean? Like they're not cooking to order. So that's a whole separate thing.
When are they? So they were in the sense that, okay, so there were six dishes, right? There are two entrees, two apps, two desserts. We got to choose, right? It wasn't one of everything, right? Like I think we purposely at our table, Tom, if I'm not mistaken, we ordered two of each, right? Because we wanted to make sure that everyone got a little of everything. But by and large, like there were tables, both people could have had the New York strip zero. You didn't know exactly what the quantities would be.
So what I would like to see, and it's a thing that I advocate a lot for, is I actually think that is enough chefs, and for a few reasons, but also because, you know, there are a lot of restaurants there. As soon as you start hiring more and more chefs, definitively, by definition, the actual quality of the expertise starts to dilute, right? So you need more and more people.
So this is the argument against expanding the NBA, the dilution of talent.
Well, except with the NBA, you can now recruit internationally, whereas under certain administrative pressures at the moment in this country, recruiting internationally may be more of a challenge in my industry. But having said all that, says the person with an accent. But having said all that,
Hershey, you're my favorite immigrant. I'll just say this.
Thank you.
Now that my great grandparents are no longer alive, you're now my favorite immigrant.
Thank you. That's good. You and my wife. That's good. It's two. I can collect. I think that that's enough. I really do think three is enough for what they're doing. Case in point, you know, we had a restaurant in Melbourne which we sold before we moved back, and we had the same sort of thing. We only had three starters, three pasta, and three mains, and we would do Saturday nights in a 50-seater with one chef and one kitchenette.
Wow.
So that's how we did it.
Wow, well, I'm in awe of these folks. I really am.
Yeah. So go on. That's the answer to that question. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that to piggyback off that is when I first walked in, Kevin, I was struck at how quiet the back room was. In retrospect, I think we walked in when we first got to the set. The Bravo staffer actually took us through the kitchen.
Yeah. And we saw it was almost like three consecutive kitchens, right? Almost contiguous.
Back to back to back, right?
Right.
And I remember the thing that struck me most was how quiet it was.
Right.
Because when you watch the show, it's dinner, 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 and it's
fire,
just like
fire,
so
force, snapper, fire, exactly.
It was just. And we must have caught the Kelsey team at a quiet downtime, because when you watch the show, it looks super chaotic and just madness.
And that's just the nature of the production, right? Like this is a 7-hour event, and essentially the editors are taking the two, probably in aggregate, the 90 most chaotic seconds. And by the way, they do a wonderful job. I mean, that is sort of the art of reality TV, is can you concentrate the really tense moments from what otherwise might be kind of a very quiet period. Let's talk about I think there's an elephant in the room. I want to get to the competition here. And the bottom line is the headline, Tom, the top of the news stack here is the best cook in the competition went home. I want to ask a few questions of each of you. Now,
the worst as well, by the way.
Now, the best cook, you think Pablo is the worst cook?
It seems to be that did he make one dish the entire season that anyone liked?
Oh yeah, the tilapia crudo at the beginning was like fantastic.
Okay.
So here's my question to each of you. I noticed a certain trope in the conversation afterwards that she was, quote, thrown under the bus, and I think this is a lot of definition creep. That this is as if Claudette was standing there. I have a lot of sympathy for Justin. You know, and tell me if I'm wrong, Hirsch, because
I'm going to push back.
All right. I know he's not the nicest guy. I know temperamentally. But the bottom line is, let's just talk about this for a second. She gets on the chopping block. The first thing she does is blame the ticket system. Am I correct that the ticket system is devised by the chef, or is it devised by the person in the front of the house?
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer. And I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep, free shipping, vacuum-sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodles is like, ah, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
So this is actually a really good way to ask the question, because it's not really as clear and simple as that I can answer that directly. And this kind of speaks to it. I do want to caveat everything and say I'm not defending her per se. I actually think it looked like she met that, you know, her going home seemed to be justified from what we saw. And I do think her kind of saying, oh, it's not all my fault, is probably something that, you know, you should take it on the chin. So I want to make it very clear, I'm not defending
her. I don't think she was thrown under the bus. I think she took an industrial belt and strapped herself to the skid plates under the bus. Right. Like, she did a terrible job. And it's like, you know, I appreciate Kelsey saying, hey, this was a bad group. Look, they all had the same pool. I mean, Tom and I saw it. They're all coming from the same pool of service folks. Somehow Sarah ended up being able to salvage it. You know, by the way, you called, I'm going to take you out on this one, Hirsch. You called Brian J.R. Smith. Well, let me tell you, motherfucker, J.R. Smith went 9-for-13, 6-for-8 from three.
Yeah, he did well.
Although, come on.
I did say that Adrian was the only one there that was a strong executive chef.
And by the way, you were absolutely, I thought she could have, I mean, as good as Brian was, I thought she would have been a worthy winner as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's get back to quickly, because I have,
let's go back to Nini, yeah, because this is,
and I have some thoughts on your question. Specifically, you asked who's responsible for the tickets. So ultimately, who's responsible for it? You guys are not in charge of the stats that you guys get. You know, I've been fortunate, I guess, to see you guys get really great stats from Synergy. You guys, it's what you guys put in as to what you get out, right? You don't own Synergy, but you guys have the right to be able to contact people there and say, hey, we'd like to see a bit more of this, we'd like to see a bit more of that. Yet the quality of the information that you're getting is directly and proportionally related to how specific you are in what information you want. So who was in charge of making sure the staff wrote the tickets as requested? That was Nini. But who was in charge of saying, this is how I want the tickets to look? That's Justin. So it's on both of them. And this is important. What I saw, and this really hit me, you know, it's a thing, again, another one of those things that I'm particularly sensitive about is, and this could be game theory, which, you know, I'm sure Tom would answer to better than I, but I saw a kitchen team that were kind of said, cool, let's just let this person go down in flames on their own.
Yes.
I'm not going to participate in helping. And this is not a thing that you see on television. This is a thing I've seen hundreds of times in kitchens, and it drives me crazy. It's a thing that
sabotage the executive chef or the front of house?
Back of house and front of house will sabotage each other. It's, you know, this is, you know, no different to a basketball team. You know, certain people not like each other on team, and they won't pass to that person. This is a real thing you guys hear about in locker rooms all the time. So this is a real thing that we see now, and it happens in everyone's place of work. So this is a thing we see all the time, and this is what I saw. The reality is that team was putting out food at such a slow pace that for the kitchen, and particularly Justin, to just stand up and go, look, the table numbers are all wrong. Call all the front of house, get them in here now. We're not sending food for 5 minutes. Get everyone in here now and let's have a quick, okay, this is this table, this is this table. Let's have a 5-minute reset. Would have had zero impact when people were waiting 45 minutes of food anyway. You didn't slow anything down to do that. And that's a failure of the head chef to not stand up and say, okay, this front of house person is failing the ability for me to express my creativity to these people. They're letting down the experience of people are having enjoying the food that I'm responsible for. I am now going to jump and say, right, not take over the front of house team, but just pull everyone in and go, guys, this is what's happening. Let's have a quick reset. Part of that failure is on Nini, and equally part of that failure needs to be on Justin.
I feel like I'm being a honk for Justin, who, you know, seems like not the most pleasant, you know, person in that situation. But I just, like, what is Nini doing? I mean, isn't that like she's got a sorbet that she prepped and whatever and passed it off. I mean, like, he's firing plate after plate after plate, which is going out, coming back, it seems, at a rate of 1 in 3. And, like, I mean, what's she doing for 5 hours?
Yeah, let me give you, because I know you guys love a basketball analogy. Do you remember that play that everyone talks about where, I can't even remember his name, the Cleveland coach that got sent packing back to Europe? What was his name again?
David Blatt.
Remember the play where Blatt called for Delly to shoot the open three and LeBron overruled him and swapped it?
Yeah.
Remember that playoff game? Okay. Everyone was like, that's the correct play. Well done, LeBron. This is the same sort of thing. At some point, Justin has to be like LeBron and go, look, it's time to call in. Nini's not pulling her weight. My customers, who are also Nini's customers, all of our customers are being affected. I'm going to jump in. And if the issue was more that you couldn't really fix it in sort of 5 minutes, or if the issue wasn't just table numbers, but a whole raft of other issues, fine, so be it. But it looked like what they were getting angry and frustrated most by was plates walking to the wrong table. You can really fix that in a 5-minute reset. Not perfectly, okay, but you can address it.
All right, let me jump in here because I need to give some other perspective here. Being someone who went to Restaurant Wars, that Kevin and I were witness to how Northeast line was backed up like crazy when we went. I thought
all of them were, though.
I talked to Allison about this morning because my memory didn't serve. I didn't know. I asked her. I said, was it just Northeast or was it the other two as well that were backed up? What Allison said was at different points in the night they were backed up, but Northeast was backed up for like at the end of the night, it was clear that Northeast was backed up way more than the other two. So I think there is a little bit of luck here that Nini, not to defend her because she was on my team, but the fact that Northeast got the judges first, I think is a big break. I think they got a big break by that because then after they left, I don't know if it – like at that point once you know that the chefs have already, the judges' table's already eaten, do you kind of just kick back and say, all right, like, you know, we already got the judges' table. And then the judges' table went to, I think they went to Thistle and then Third Coast. So Needy's team. So I kind of feel like they got a broad deal there by having the judges the third, the last, because that has the more risk of the backup, everything getting backed up. And I think Nini just got overwhelmed because of the fact that there was such a backup and people were going in wrong directions. And I think Northeast got lucky that they weren't the third team versus the first team. It was a small factor, not everything.
No, I think that's fair. I do wonder, though, if they get to – I mean, this is maybe a little inside baseball, but do they get to watch maybe some sort of clips of what they didn't see, the judges, that is?
I don't know.
Or do they have a scout? I mean, that would be an interesting thing. Do they have a scout that tells them? This is an interesting thing because I wanted to, Hershey, you know, one of the things you kind of always talk about cultures. I was very impressed with Sarah, at least from the clips we saw on the show, of the way she handled staff.
Right.
Her affability, my people. Like, you know, there's that study, Tom, that you and I have seen about how like Harvard did that. If teammates on the floor who touch each other and like Steve Nash and Dirk Nowitzki, like get better results from teammates. And she also, from an expedient standpoint, I think understands something that I think a lot of contestants don't, which is not to be cynical, but it's really all that matters is the judge's table. I mean, if you put out dog food for everybody else at the end of the day, like it's the judges, like when they came, it's like, Jesus is coming, look ready. I also found it amusing that she told the servers, her people, Padma, the banging hot one was what she said, which I found very amusing.
But banging hot one, obviously, and then she was like, "Wait, they're all banging hot."
You know, Thistle had an interesting night, right? Like Michelle, we've learned is a pasta machine. She is, comes from Flour and Water in San Francisco. I picked her very high with this expectation, the sweet pea. And Alati was I think Carolyn Stein said that she would have it as a permanent dish on her menu. You know, that was a winner. And Michelle, you know, you had said about kind of voice. Hershey, you were impressed with Adrian. Obviously, Michelle's a little quieter. But in terms of the expos, I mean, you would rank them Adrian, Michelle, Justin, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a number of issues with Justin, just that sort of throwing up in the air. I thought Michelle got her team to the finish line. I thought, you know, Adrian sort of came across as someone to really have – you know, there's a complex personality needed to do that. You can't just be gentle and be my people. You have to be firm at time. And I think, you know, on last week's episode, Tom, I didn't see that clip, but you pointed out there was a clip of her being firm about her tickets. Yep. And then Bridget and I, you know, watched it together on Thursday night and it felt completely fair enough. I actually liked the way she delivered it. To her point, which she said later in they kind of made a joke later that she didn't yell at any staff, only yelled at Brian, which – you know, case in point, that's, you know, she knew that he could take being spoken to.
Right, that's Pop and Tim Duncan, right?
Pop. That's it. Exactly. That was, you stole my analog. But that's exactly what it is.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You know? No, that's right. No, that's good. That's spot on. I think we're seeing it the same way. You know, if you can yell at the team leader, then everyone knows that there's a line there that can't be crossed. I actually thought Adrian did a spectacular job as what they showed. I mean, yeah, I thought Michelle did a good job. I think she failed in not, you know, to the what they asked her on. You know, she didn't really taste the food, which is obviously, you know, it's interesting to me, like, you don't have to do what I do for a living. You just have to watch Top Chef. And what you learn is that constantly people are getting in trouble for not tasting the food. Like, at what point are people going to watch their own show and start tasting the food that they're putting up?
Tom, you and I both loved Adrian's desserts too. I mean, again, I thought it could have been a pick'em with Brian and
Kevin.
Adrian. That peach and that triple cream with the basil focaccia was fantastic.
Kevin, I almost had to get divorced after that because I ate all of Adrian's dish. The dessert, because it was so delicious.
Wait, which one? You ate the peach or the cheese?
The peach.
I thought they were both fantastic.
And Allison was like, hey, Tom, are you? Can we switch plates now? And she looks over at my dish, and it's completely empty.
Yeah, but Allison was already – she was three seats to the win at that point.
Yes. She was flying high on rosé. So at that point, she was like, I hate you because I wanted that peach dish. It looked so good, and I was like, it was so good. And she was so mad at me. Yeah.
The triple cream with the basil focaccia was just fascinating and good texture. And I'm a guy who loves a cheese plate, and it was just a different way to go with blackberry. And I thought Adrian has had a great night. And I really, her comportment, I think it's okay to be firm. I talk to you, you only talk to me.
No, she did it right.
Yeah, yeah. And
to me, she was the winner to me, way of looking at it. But I think, let's sort of carry on and talk about, I don't know, go in order. I mean, I will say I did enjoy very much the editors of the television show making fun of Sarah going through every dish like she was explaining very, very slowly running through the Constitution of the United States. I found that to be very amusing. I know, you know, I think we've all had the experience in modern dining of where you go and the waiter comes over and says, I'm going to tell you the specials. And then 6 hours later, you've passed out and fallen asleep. So that was fun. They made fun of that because that's.
But by the way, she handled, I thought, very well the judge's table, right? Like she said, she's got a very good at social cues because she said, "Hey, I was a little nervous, and look, you got all these power women at the table." And before they could continue to chide her, they were all laughing at the judge's table. So she did a very good job of deflecting. She absorbed the criticism, was self-deprecating, and by the time Padma had thrown that at her, she'd already come back and had them laughing about the power women at the table and Tom and whatnot. So further, the Paducah Jew is just like, I want her jersey. I'm so into it. It just really loved the whole thing. I mean, only the candied ginger in her gazpacho, I think, was the only blemish on her night.
Well, but, Kevin, would you rather have the Paducah Jew jersey or the Eddie jersey? Because he did great on this episode as well. The crudo, the forgotten crudo.
The forgotten crudo.
The forgotten crudo.
But, you know, his New York strip, I think we both loved.
Yes.
And again, the crudo just needed a little togarashi. He just needed a little sprinkle
of chili,
heat.
A little spice.
Yeah, just something. It wasn't bad. It was just, I mean, it was just next to, frankly, it was next to the Ballantine. And then they went into two very good entrees as well. So the food, I mean, not to, just aside from Brian sort of holding up and Adrian being a good expediter, I think, you know, the food, we had five fantastic dishes and one decent dish, the forgotten crudo. Just nailed the food as much as anything.
And I think that's what it looks like. Yeah, and they also said it was interesting to say this wasn't, you know, I think Tom said, normally there's one team that really stands out in a restaurant wars, but it seems like, you know, there was, everyone had issues, I suppose, so no one really stood out as the clear winner, which may mean, I guess, no one really stood out as the clear loser as well.
Hershey, do you feel validated by the thistle?
That it got stuck in someone's throat. How amazing was that?
Artichokes. Hey, let's talk about artichokes. I mean, I love skimming my teeth across the surface of an artichoke like everybody else. I love the idea of artichokes more than the – it's like eating – when I get crab legs or something, I don't want to work that hard.
Disagree. I think there is something there's the journey is part of the destination, you know, like I like that part of it. And also, like,
let me tell you something, Tom, if the dinner check is three figures, I ain't no journey destination.
So but then you get the artichoke heart, and if you dip it in the butter, like when I grew up, I would have, like, it was a delicacy. It was just an artichoke steamed for whatever it was, and then you dip it into the butter, dip it into the mayo, whatever you want, and then then you take the artichoke heart and you scoop out the very tiny thistles, right? And the tiny blades, you scoop it out with a spoon, and then you dump the kind of artichoke heart, like the stem and that base, into the butter. It's just delicious. So I'm a big fan of artichokes and the thistle. What was Padma spitting out there, Hershey? Like, what was?
So the thistle is a flower, right? So if you're going to use it for the flavor is interesting. It's this kind of green, slightly aggressive flavor, which is great. You can offset it with a fat. I'm guessing they didn't really chop it up very finely so that it kind of mixed in. So you just got the flavor without the texture. And it looked like she had a nice little chunk of this prickly flowers, which is as unpleasant as it sounds, which I guess kind of was interesting. The other thing as well, along that, because you mentioned thistles, this is why I'm thinking of this. There was, you're going to have to remind me, one of the groups just did not have any cohesion in terms of from one dish to another. I'm trying to think if that was that the blue team?
The Third Coast had that sort of Gulf Coasty theme.
Yeah.
But I don't know, did the duck kind of cabbage go away from that? It was the Creole duck cabbage. But those entrees look very good, though.
They actually looked excellent. And this speaks to an experience now you two have that the rest of us don't have, which is all of us, you know, it's a very hard show to watch without being able to eat the food. But I guess, you know, that's the advantage you two now have.
Okay, I have a question here. Going back to Nini, because we could do a whole episode about Nini, right?
Yeah.
When she comes out and discusses with one of the servers, like in front of the judge's table, I was like, I threw my hat across the room because it seemed like have this private conversation, be behind closed doors. You don't want to bring all the baggage out and have the dirty laundry in front of the judge's table. So she says she felt betrayed by her team not putting on the sorbet. And instead, as someone described it to me afterwards on the shuttle, it looked like her dish was a plate full of poop emoticons. And so there was no ice cream. It looked like just poop, right? Like this was one of the people on the shuttle after Top Chef Restaurant Wars, someone who went to the Third Coast restaurant described it as a plate of poop emojis. And Nini felt betrayed. And I'm wondering what you guys thought of the gamesmanship, the game theory of Kelsey. I think it was Kelsey who had the executive decision of like, we're not plating the ice cream. We're just going to make this look pretty. We cannot serve the ice cream because it's already melted.
I mean, my opinion is this. First of all, I don't have any belief that Kelsey was gaming it. Like, she's a benevolent person. She stood up for Nini. She, I think, tried her best. I mean, and I don't want to hit Nini too hard. I did it last week. I just want to, as a disclaimer, say I don't know if there's any chef on the show whose food I'd rather eat on a daily basis than Nini's. I mean, she's just turned out fantastic. It's all the more my frustration that she just made one bad decision after another. I mean, not only taking the front of the house when you're the best cook, but what dessert are you going to do? Something that isn't durable, right? Like Hershey, you can speak to this. It's 95 degrees out. Tom, you and I were there. Like, you don't know the condition of the freezer. You know, you understand the chaos. You choose to do not the night to do a sorbet. And then you have, oh, I felt betrayed. By whom? Kelsey was doing everything in her power to make sure you didn't go home. I mean, I, you're blaming the ticket system. Like, I just this mission creep, this definition creep of I was thrown under the bus. No, you strapped yourself under the bus.
And agreed. And they're being judged again. It's Top Chef, not Top Cook. And so there is no head chef
or top scallop.
Top scallop. There you go. There is no real head chef. I mean, even in the restaurant example that I gave, you know, with how we had one head chef and one kitchen hand, my business partner was essentially the person, the executive chef, you know, of the restaurant. So the skill of being an executive chef is not being able to put together a dish, but being able to put together a dish that you can then have another human being replicate consistently, right? And then be able to educate that and get that done. So, you know, the failure is very much on her end, even if there was a sabotage. Well, perhaps if there wasn't, if there was a sabotage. That would
Tom,
be an example,
do you really think there was, there Tom? Wasn't.
No, I think those are one of those moments that it everything rises to the surface. In that moment, there was a decision made that we cannot put out a plate that is a soup, basically a melted sorbet. And you know what? She's not going to like this, but this is as good as – it's going to be worse if we plate her idea of having the melted soup sorbet out there. We can't plate it. And it's one of those things, like Tom Colicchio always hits on this, is if you know it's bad, do not put it out, right? Kelsey made the executive decision, we cannot plate this, and Nene took the fall for it. And this is the thing, Kevin, you hit on this about your discussion of Nene. She chose to be the front of the house. Like, we can hammer her decisions because this is not something that she was handed. This is something she wanted.
By the way, imagine that team with Kelsey still doing her fantastic biscuit panna cotta dessert. But the front of the house, Nene can be back there. Nene's now probably, you know, improving upon that awful oyster dish, which she probably could have nailed by herself. She can still do her sorbet or something else. Like just imagine a world where Nene is, you know, nailing one of the two appetizers, nailing a dessert. Kelsey's due in front of the house. She's so capable and competent and system-oriented. Hershey, is there other – I noticed that they put on the menu chocolate. Just simply chocolate, which is kind of a both enticing and confounding way to sort of advertise a dessert. Got hurt by that as well. What do you make of that as somebody who's created menus?
I don't agree at all. I love that notion of, you know, we were just mentioning, you know, someone reading too many ingredients. It takes away from the pleasure of the experience. I know if you want to know what's in the items, you should be able to ask.
Tell me if there's cilantro. That's all I care.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. No, but that's actually, I mean, you're saying that as a joke, but it's true. Like, that's the thing that a lot of people don't like or might be allergic to. So just mention the things that people are triggered by or are allergic to, and that's enough. You don't need to go into a whole, are you ready for the
I don't need the whole Megillah. The only trigger warning I need in life is cilantro. You know what I like is a trend that started a few years ago of just kind of Ari Tamor, my friend who did Alma and is now at the Little Prince in Santa Monica, just sort of ingredient, cereal, comma, ingredient, cereal, comma, ingredient, cereal, comma, ingredient.
That's it.
I'm a big fan of that. Yeah.
Yeah. A big movement that started in the mid-2000s in super expensive fine dining London restaurants. So Petrus did it and Tom Aiken. So there's a lot of, they would just say the animal. That's it. It's lamb. That was the whole menu item. I do like that. So I'm a big fan of that.
So Brian came out to the table and said that there were they wanted to showcase the humble proteins on the menu. And I've never heard of the term humble protein, so I'm guessing it's what?
It's those chicken? Arrogant proteins. Those egomaniac.
Those pompous proteins.
See, but I would think of pork is a humble protein, I think.
Yes.
But I do not think that scallops are a humble protein.
That's right. That's
and
good
certainly
point.
A New York strip is not.
No.
The New York strip is the egomaniac of proteins.
We haven't spoken about Pablo at all. Should we talk a little about Pablo?
I'm glad you brought him up because I kind of felt like he was the surprise elimination. I thought that
is
they were going to send Justin.
There, Tom?
No, because he's on Kevin's team. Oh, you're saying because I lived in Miami for a while and I've been to 27. So I kind of felt like it was almost contrived to me, the idea that Pablo was sent home, because I felt like both teams are on the bottom. And I felt I had this thought that maybe they decided, all right, instead of sending two from one team, we're going to send one from each and we have to pick the worst from each team. And because I felt like Justin performed worse, but I thought that what happened with that Northeast Kitchen was a lot worse than what happened with Pablo.
So I agree, Justin should have been sent home, but I also think we're watching it as what we saw. I think that's why I asked the question if they would have seen. Like, if I would have just been the judges or in fact, you know, you guys, I guess the only interaction I would have had was the Nene's failure, and then I would have had interaction with Pablo's failure because I ate the food. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if they got to really see what was going on back in the kitchen, which is an interesting thing in its own right. I do think his food just seemed really plain and simple, and then he was unable to execute something really simple, which is a skill, but you know, I think he was the right person to go home. The only other thing is, you know, and this is probably a better question for you guys, is because you're in more into the game theory of this. Is Brandon going to be this like expert at just skating by to the final three and then pulling it together at the end? Because he seems to be, you know, just like in the background, not hurting anyone.
By the way, and completely pleasant. I feel terrible at my early commentary that he was the designated asshole. Like, seems absolutely lovely.
I know. And he's been right. Like I think he had another one this episode.
With Pablo's needs a little more heat or something, or I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, like
just nailed it every single time.
I don't know if he's got that kind of talent. I mean, I think at a certain point, and also there have been a few misfires. By the way, he did participate in a trend I don't like, which is corn in strange places, Hershey. There's lots of corn in strange places now. And by the way, I love a sweet corn. I mean, I like a maize. I mean, give me a humitas when you go to, you know, Latin America. Like I think there is a place for corn, but it's starting to pervade environments on plates that I don't need corn on.
Right. But that's also that also reflects really interestingly on what he is as a chef. So being a private chef is someone that is taking yesterday's trends and then delivering it in someone's house. That's very reductive and almost entirely insulting. And I'm comfortable being as insulting as this, but that's really what it is. So I do think we'll start to see with his food, like it is, he's cooking very 90s food, this kind of, here's a pit of red meat, here's a Jew underneath. No.
And I mentioned that in the early episode. There was something very like that 2000, the strip on the polenta, the very 2004. Yeah. All right, let me ask you a question, Hershey. Tomorrow you can hire one private chef for the rest of your life. Who is it?
To cook for me at the house?
Yeah, to cook for you at your house. He's just your private chef for the rest of your life.
I still think Nini makes the best food.
No. I mean, not among the contestants. I mean, in the entire world.
Oh, in the whole world?
In the whole world.
Oh, man. Wow, that's really thrown me here. Holy smokes. I have no idea. You know, I think...
We'll come back to you at the end of the show.
We'll come back to you at the end of the show. I don't know who listens to this around the world. I'm probably going to get an email from someone from saying I didn't, you know, that I didn't choose them. I have no idea. Wow, what a great question. Okay, carry on. Wow,
oh, yeah. Something. I had a couple more notes here, Tom. I think, where are my other notes here? I liked that Kelsey nailed her dessert, and I'm becoming increasingly bullish on Kelsey as a participant. I mean, that was a high intensity. You've got, I mean, a panna cotta in that temperature could just go all wrong. It was gorgeous in terms of, I mean, it's one of the prettiest desserts I've ever seen in my life. I like the fact that there was an assertiveness. Again, I think they win if she and Nini switch places. I mean, I really do.
I'm 100%. I was just going to say that seems like even more apparent now after watching the second half of Restaurant Wars. Just a misstep it was to have Nini in front of house in place of Kelsey. I just thought Kelsey did a great job. And at one point, Kelsey just started laughing at the insanity of it all, like just laughing at the tickets coming back. And I'm more bullish. What?
Sorry, I need to push back on that. I did not like that.
You got to have some levity in this situation, but understanding this is...
Tom, the levity is not the issue. It felt very sabotaging. It felt really kind of... I'm not going to get involved. I'm going to let you just sort of go down on your own. Rather than if this was a real restaurant and you were really the chef and it were going down, would you really be out the back going, ha, ha, how funny this is going down? You'd be thinking, what can I do to try and salvage this situation? Not for me, but for the poor human beings out there that are having to suffer through this, i.e. the customers.
I don't know. I think there is kind of a therapeutic way to, or a cathartic like laughter of like, okay, let's at this moment understand how ridiculous this situation is. Let's just let this breathe out of our pores here, and then we can get back to business. I saw it differently.
Yeah, no, I think you're both right. Like, right. So Hershey, you deal in an environment where tonight's mishap affects tomorrow's closure. Like, right? Like I think Kelsey's and Justin and whoever else are very aware that in 3 hours none of this means anything. Like, they're literally going to fold up the restaurant, and everyone's going to go home. And right, like you live in a world where if that happens on your watch, It's your career. It's the career of your chef. It's the lease that you're not going to be able to pay on the space. So
that's true.
I mean, I wonder if Kelsey, you know, if this were a restaurant that they all had a material stake in, I wonder if it's different. I mean, this is truly just like a set. I mean, it's a Potemkin village.
True, but wouldn't you? But yes.
But I hear you. I hear you as well.
But don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's an element of, as well, of me kind of being a bit cynical of saying, is this performative or is this really something that you're super passionate and proud of? Because even if I'm going to roll up tomorrow, it doesn't matter. These, I have a responsibility to deliver these people the best that I can. And is this, are you a chef? Are you performing as a chef or are you a chef?
Yeah, it's a good question. Closing thoughts. Just run through the roster of remaining contestants. Eric seemed to put out, I mean, we had his dish, Tom, and I remember enjoying it quite a bit, the scallop and pork.
It was dry, it was salty, but mine was. I remember it being, I think it was very thinly sliced pork, and it just felt like it was overcooked, but the rest of the dish was fantastic. And it was one of those, I don't know if it was Padma or Tom who had a similar feeling, which was like, if the other stuff was just so good, you didn't need the pork or whatever it was.
That's a classic Tom Colicchio, just take one ingredient off the plate kind of comment. But my point is he continues to turn out really impressive food. Eddie, I'm a spiritual soulmate of Eddie. Like his shock and sort of slight Eeyore-ness I feel upset by winning
and you're like,
I'm just shocked. And he's just, you know, it's a lot of nervous energy, but the guy continues to make good food. We have a Last Chance Kitchen. I mean, I just want to kind of tease it for everybody. I mean, it's absolute madness back there.
Oh, my goodness.
They essentially recreate Restaurant Wars.
I don't know what to do. Yeah.
Now, I will say Natalie was bumped, and we're not going to get to enjoy her work anymore, which is a shame. They eliminated 2 out of 4 chefs, and only Nini and survived along with Brother Luck, Mr. Last Chance Kitchen himself. The two of them were essentially asked to recreate Restaurant Wars, essentially come up with a theme and 3 dishes in, you know, whatever, like 11 minutes or whatever it was, you know, like, and so it was a cliffhanger. So we're going to find out, Tom, next week, one of those 2 individuals is going to walk back through that door. So Nini might be walking through that door. Brother Luck might be walking through that door. And we will be back to 11 contestants in the main competition, one of which will be either Brother or Nini. So, you know, you might not be without Nini for long, Tom. I mean, your score sheet might look almost as if she didn't even disappear.
Yeah, and I got to say, my team's looking pretty strong right now. If Nini comes back, I have Brother and Nini on my team, Kevin.
No, so you've automatically got another entry next week. And either, as you know, Tom, whoever comes back, they're going to be a force to reckon with. Those are 2 very good chefs who could easily finish in the top 4. So that's a very interesting development with LCK. And it'll be fascinating to see who wins that. We do not have any clarity from Bravo or Top Chef of the loser of this Last Chance. Do they go back into the Last Chance pool, or are they just eliminated? So, are they in the peanut gallery, you know, with Waldorf and Stadler and the rest of them?
I think that's a great reference. I think this has to be continuing Last Chance Kitchen. They can't just like end Last Chance Kitchen with like 10 episodes to go.
No, my question is do they just, actually you're right, because whoever gets eliminated has to have someone to play. So maybe that's the case. Because LCK is, by the way, I just want to say, because it's been a few seasons now, what a wonderful way, just from a media standpoint, Tom, and you're somebody who has, you know, digital media, unique products. And, you know, I don't know what you think, Hershey, but I think if I had to show a mainline broadcast show how to really utilize digital only content and still stay true to your show, is there Last Chance Kitchen is really like a broadcast success, isn't it? Like the idea that you can get your fix isn't over for the week. You know that you get another 12 minutes of really of everything you love, which is the competition and the judging and everything else. Like I'm not trying to flatter Bravo. Like, I just think that it's a perfect portrait of how to use the digital platform to enhance your mainline show.
100%. 100%.
And I, you know, I had this conversation, interesting enough, last week. I think however much plaudits he gets as an executive, Andy Cohen is really, the skill set of that human being is extraordinary, no? Like, I mean, he's in charge of the network, is that correct?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
He was. I felt like he was, and then the show started. I don't know what Andy Cohen's official title is right now.
That's he's a good everybody's question favorite. For my sister who worships Andy Cohen.
Very clever, his use of multiple media outlets is extraordinarily clever.
And a hero to gay, Jewish, 40 somethings everywhere. So I'm a big Andy Cohen fan, and apparently a big St. Louis Cardinals fan, Tom. Apparently a big St. Louis Cardinals fan.
You kind of everyone has a flaw.
Yeah. I'm a little weird on the Cardinals. Like on one hand, I admire the organizational culture. They're kind of Spursy. But on the other hand, like I grew up a Braves fan, and it's sort of like they were always the fair-haired child and kind of annoying. But I did love Willie McGee and Ozzie Smith and that team. So Joaquin Andujar.
I remember me and my brother playing fantasy baseball like in 2004, and 2 weeks into the season, he goes to the waiver wire and just says, "Whoever has the most RBIs, I'm going to pick up off the waiver wire." And some guy with 7 RBIs on the season was named Albert Pujols.
There you go.
And he picked him up and was like, "I don't know who this guy is, but I'm going to pick him up off of waivers." And it turned into one of the best hitters of all time.
Yeah, the teams I remember are Tommy Herr and Joaquin Andujar and Lonnie Smith, Ken Obrickfell. I'm old, man. I am really fucking old. Like, those are the Cardinal teams I remember. Tito Landrum. I was
saying Pujols because of how unfamiliar this,
Jose
this guy
Akendo.
Was.
Jose Akendo. See, I'm so much older than both of you. It's amazing. Anyway, Hershey, this has been such a pleasure. And your perspective as somebody who's really, you face these questions. This is your professional pursuit. You answer and ask these questions every single night and day, and as you essentially your life is a restaurant war. So
right.
appreciated.
Because now you can talk about it openly. So I guess what we've seen now is the pull that Tom and Kevin have with the producers of the show. So maybe next year we can get them to implement this, front of house experts to balance out the back of house.
Yeah, I really think, Tom, I really think this would kind of be a really interesting development. What if these people were furnished with professional wait staff? You know, how does that change? And you can still trip them up. Maybe you could still, give them a few.
There's many ways you could trip them up.
Right. You can put enough sand traps, I think, on the course.
Have someone hit the power button out the back and they have to cook in the dark for 5 minutes. Stuff like that. You could have fun with it.
But it would be really interesting. And I just think that but Nene, to me, Tom, I'm still floored. Will go down as one of the worst play calls, playing Marty ball, basically. Just one of the worst play calls ever to attenuate your best skill in favor of one you don't have.
Well, the question is,
how does that reflect on a chef? Like, it can reflect negatively on a chef, but ultimately she got voted off the island because of her front of house skills.
I'm excited for her redemption tour because brother.
Yeah, we have no idea. I mean, brother and
brother's gonna be big.
Brother Luck back on the show. Goodness gracious, what a development that would be! Back in the main competition. We need to get brother on this show, don't we? We need to.
Yeah, we got
to
do that.
It's time to break bread with brother. Yes.
You know what? This is for all those Bravo producers or Bravo magical elves, whoever it is. I think it'd be time to have one of them on the show just to kind of spitball some ideas to them and see what they think. Because like the idea of like the service wait staff, like I would love to just learn more about like the ideas going into Restaurant Wars or just the show in general. It'd be cool to just kind of pick their brain about the decision making that goes into the production of the show without revealing too much. I think that would be a fun guest. And also Brother Luck and also Richard Blaze. And also got to get some of our old favorites.
We got to get Mina in here.
Mina
and I were texting the other day, man. We got to get Mina back.
You're missing the best guest that you got to have on. It's Unsteady Eddie.
Oh yeah, we'll start bringing in some contestants.
So I have a theory. I think Eddie could very well win this competition. I think
Agreed.
He's an incredibly talented chef. I am a soulmate of his self-deprecating sort of nervous energy, and all the rest of it. And I think he'd be a terrible podcast guest.
No,
I don't know.
Not as an insult. Like I just
no.
We want to get Sarah on. I want to get Sarah on this show. I want to talk Southern Jewry, culinary Jewry with Sarah. That would be a lot of fun.
The top point getters right now so far.
Yeah, give me the standings. Yeah.
In the Pack Your Knives fantasy teams, Team Kevin right now is trailing Team Tom, 46-60. The top scorers so far, Nini is still on top.
Even with the elimination.
Even with the elimination, she is at 17 points. So there isn't really another top performer, another juggernaut in the competition. David is actually at 13, the leading scorer for you. Then,
by the 12, way, had a very good week on a bad team.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Still a rock star, David. As good as Eddie, I think, on your team. As good a pick for you. So you got David. You have Eddie. You have Michelle. You have Sarah.
Michelle,
you have,
sleeping giant, by the way, Michelle.
You have Eric, and you have Pablo. Just got booted and is now on a stool in Last Chance Kitchen Dungeon. For me, I've got Nini, Brian, Adrian, Justin, Kelsey, Brandon, and brother. So I have seven contestants still alive. It will get whittled down to six.
You know what? I know I'm down. I like my team. I think Michelle could pasta her way all the way to the finals. I think Eric is a sleeping giant. I really like my team. Pablo has been a total disappointment. He's my Darko Milicic to echo a Hershey reference early. A high pick that is flamed out. My Anthony Bennett, but I believe in my team. And we're just going to go out there and take it one episode at a time and give it our all.
Be aggressive out there. We're
going to be aggressive out there. You cook your food.
You got to take what the menu gives you.
Take what the competition gives you. All those things. I believe in my team and its culture. And I'm down 14, but I'm confident.
I mean, maybe we should talk about this offline and away from Tom, but I just think Adrian needs to be a trade target. A midseason before the trade deadline.
Well, let me counter with this. I thought her desserts were beautiful. She's clearly an expediter. We love her temperament and comportment. I think she's had a series of some bad decision makings in competition.
I'll keep her. That's fine.
I like Adrian. Like honestly, like I'm with you, Hirsch. If I had to like start a restaurant tomorrow, I think she'd be on my team. I mean, if I had to draft for Restaurant Wars, like specifically Restaurant Wars. Like that, she would be one of my four without question. She has demonstrated, and I don't mean this as a terrible insult. Like, you know, a couple doing pasta when you know there's not time. There've been a couple of kind of misfires. I don't know. Has she made? Although we loved her. I mean, Tom, you're right. Those desserts were fantastic.
You know what? I think you have six contestants. Let me run through it real quick. You have five contestants: Eddie, Michelle, David, Eric, and Sarah. I don't think you're trading any of those. I think they're all just about untouchable. Like,
I like my team.
Like, I just thought, like, all right, if I were gonna, trade Adrian, who would you be willing to give up? And I'm looking at your roster, Kevin, and I'm not seeing someone that you would be willing to trade.
You know, I like my team. I mean, my team is very reflective of my taste. And,
can I speak out against our people? Can I just do that? I like Sarah a lot. There's something. Yeah, I don't think we've seen her feet held to the flame. And I think you're kind of...
Well, I don't think she's the best chef on my team. She's just my favorite chef. No, I don't think... I mean, Hershey, I've been waiting for a Southern Jew on this competition my entire life.
No, I'm with you. I mean, it's basically you and her and your sister in Georgia. Like, that's who's left. You're the last three.
I mean, I'm very... Tony Kushner.
Really?
Maybe the greatest American playwright of the of recent years. Is a from Lake Charles, Louisiana.
So, by the way, Kevin, just so for the record, we're terrible at drafting again because
yes, we are terrible.
The lowest point getters, the worst fantasy players this season were our top picks. Natalie -4. Then you have Pablo, who was basically your 1A pick or 1B pick. Like you drafted Eddie first, and then you went with Pablo, and Pablo is at -4 too. So both of our number one picks essentially,
Tom,
are going to have the worst outputs.
It feels like it's been 3 years since tilapia crudo with green apple vinaigrette, sweet potato bourbon puree, and togarashi chips. Man, Pablo came out of the box. I mean, that was hey. I mean, this leads to another thing. Are crudos sort of crutches? I mean, Hirsch, what do you think about this? Is it we're at a point where any even amateur chef with enough time and ingredients can put a great crudo and it deceives us into thinking they're brilliant chefs?
What do you mean time? I don't think you even need time.
That's what I'm saying. No, with even the modicum.
I think that show that as a show it seems to be very crudo friendly. But no, I don't think so. I think you've got less places to hide behind, right? So if the more simple a dish, the harder it is to hide behind an ingredient or one particular thing. So I just think crudos are a really great way to show technicality and able to show restraint. Case in point, the forgotten crudo that you started talking about on this particular episode. So I don't think so. I think it is a really great way to show your technique. But there are other ways that you could show your technique. There seems to be a lot of crudos on the last few seasons.
It's not top crudo.
It's top crudo.
Well, I think because of the fact you don't have to cook it, I think it makes itself so much of a top over. It's so valuable to have something you don't have to spend any time on in a time constraint competition.
You also don't have to cook a salad. Like if you could win, the Simpsons line, you don't win friends with salad. But if you could win friends with salad,
Suzanne Goyen wins friends with salad every freaking night. And actually, Carolyn Stein, who was on the show, one of the guest judges, is her partner. Suzanne Goyen wins.
I like those restaurants, by the way. I know it's like
I love her food. The answer to the question.
It's not cool to admit it, but I love those.
You know what's funny about? I mean, we're going deep cut here, Tom. I apologize. To answer the question I asked you, my personal chef would be Suzanne Goyen. Like every night of my life, like at the end of the day, that's kind of probably who I want. Unless it's like, the best Japanese chef in Tokyo that I don't know.
I was thinking.
But the thing is, Luke was very cool when it opened in 98. It was the place, and now it's a place where you can get the reservation the day of, and it's still you're going to go get one of the 10 best meals in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that place.
Can I ask you a question?
Can
I ask you a question? Do you have to incorporate I'm going to be living with this person essentially for the rest of my life?
No, they don't have to you don't have to when you pad downstairs in the morning to get your coffee, they're not going to be standing there reading the paper.
Okay. Personality and just that
they're
stuff.
They're in the back house. In fact, if you don't even want to see them, you don't even have to see them.
Okay, gotcha.
Because
that's an important factor. Yeah.
Right.
Tom, who's yours?
I didn't hear that. What'd you say?
Who's yours? What's your choice?
Oh, I was thinking, because I was incorporating the personality, I kind of felt like Dale Talde from Top Chef All Stars. That'd be a good choice because I feel like he knows enough basketball and enough sports. But I went to one of his. It's called Kobaya. Shout out to Kobaya in Miami. Underground kitchen, like the chefs in Miami try out a menu and you pay $100 for a seat at the table. He did an amazing Filipino dinner for like 30 of us, and it was so delicious. No utensils. You just the food Excellent. Is out on the table, and you just get your hands dirty. And
I
eat.
Love no utensils. Utensils are dainty, Northern European Protestant. Tyranny, like the rest of the world doesn't. I don't like utensils. I want to.
Yeah, we
food.
Went to the Ethiopian restaurant in Boston. That was like
I was so happy with that.
It was so good. So anyway, that's my pick.
Hershey, have you come up with one?
I feel like I have to fly an Australian flag. I'm just trying to think who I would pick. I mean, that actually changes it. The thing of this is really hard to answer without offending anyone. But if you were to ask me, like, I guess if I didn't have to talk to you know what? This is what I'm going to choose. I'm going to choose my old business partner, Dino Esposito, just because the really authentic Southern Italian food and his very, very.
You like all that red sauce business?
So his ability to blend the aggressive flavors of the Southern Italian food with super, super, super delicate, so he's from Campania, down on the Amalfi Coast. So that sort of, very light and delicate seafood and be able to put that together with more aggressive flavors is particularly unique. Dino has very famously a very abrasive personality. So, that would, there's that to go with it, but yeah, I would probably choose that or probably, I don't know, maybe, yeah, that'll do. Maybe one of the McConnell brothers, possibly as well, flying the Australian flag. But yeah, that's a really hard question to answer because do you choose? Here's the question. This maybe we're getting off track, but you could do a whole pod about this. Are you going to choose someone who's particularly strong in a particular type of food, but 2 years into his assignment of working at the house, you're like, oh my God, I just want something different? Or do you choose someone whose expertise is spread a little thinner so that they can provide you diversity of flavors, but it's not as precise?
Yeah, that's my thinking with Goyen is, I mean, granted, I live in California, so she's just kind of. She's has been important to the kind of California. Take the simple ingredients, the great produce, the protein, and just and some nights it's gonna might have a North African
right.
little thing. Some, you know, there's, you know, certainly, you know, there's always, I mean, Asian elements in California cuisine, but
that's right.
But that's sort of like if I had to eat the rest of my life, whereas I, Japanese food is my favorite food. I don't know, but I, you know, maybe some, I just think that, like, you know, she's the great generalist.
Right. I would also choose, to be fair, speaking of people who I've worked for with, would be Chef Tim Carey, who is the creator of one of your favorite dishes, the sea urchin panna cotta.
Oh, God.
But, that is, but yeah, so good. Just he's a
Tom, the sea urchin panna cotta. Holy goodness. I hope you can have that with me sometime.
Yeah, he's actually available if anyone wants. He could be talked into doing some home cooking at the moment, apparently. Some private chefing, I should say.
So, you know what? Maybe for one of my big birthdays, I'll. I've always wanted to do that, is have like a chef cook for my like 8 best friends or whatever, or just at home, 10 best friends, whatever, and just kind of, that would be a perfect birthday evening.
Hey, Kevin, let's give a round of applause and a thank you to Bravo for having us at Restaurant Wars. I mean, that was such a cool experience. One of the top five moments of my, you know, professional career. This was a hobby that we just decided, hey, what if we just recorded our phone conversations that we have recapping the show, and it turned into going to Restaurant Wars. Thank you so much.
It was finesse. Bravo did a great thing. I think, and also I think the hilarity of the fact that actually it was my partner, Eric Schwartzel, who got the big laugh line on the show. Yeah. As he texted me, you know, so Eric and I always have this funny thing where on Top Chef at these, you know, various, when they're showing kind of the patron response, they always cut to like a gay couple saying something like, you know, it's just, the flavors were great, you know, like, and we always it's been kind of a funny running joke with us, with like the we want to be Top Chef gays, and Eric got to be a Top Chef gay, you know,
after he really did,
you know, he got, you know, none of us remember the crudo, like it was just a rosé-fueled quip that will forever resonate in our memory. I'm with you, Tom. This was one of the great highlights of my year last year, and of doing this, like, what a joy, a year and a half into our little project here to be guests at Restaurant Wars. So thank you, Bravo, and thank you, Top Chef.
And thank you, Hershey, for joining us on Restaurant Wars. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Great week. We didn't even get to talk about Kawhi's return to San Antonio. We'll have to do that another time.
Yeah, we'll do that another time, another pod. This is Pack Your Knives.
So the star of the show is rosé?
I mean,
definitely in the backseat.
We back here really enjoyed our rosé. They kept it full.